Hi, this is Alan Nelson, your host for Rev Audio Magazine. Our guest today is Will Mancini, a noted church consultant and author of Unique Church. We're going to talk to Will today about what he's learning in his work with churches, helping them navigate growth challenges and taking them to the next level. Will, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Alan. Great to be here.
Hey, I was just mentioning in this short history of audio magazines, you are the very first one who has been on twice. So, I'm honored.
Hey, it's great. Well, it's a privilege.
Now, you used to be a pastor. You're not just this, out-of-college church consultant. Give us just a fast bio on your work as a pastor.
Yeah, I worked in two churches, Alan, and they were kind of opposite poles on the spectrum of growth, if you will. I worked for a few years in a inner-city church, Baptist church, that was dealing with all the difficulties of a changing neighborhood, dealing with a 20-year decline. And in that environment, you're doing everything to try to, manufacture energy and generate enthusiasm and figure out, how to reach a changing, demographic. And from that experience, I left to plant a church, and I guess I wanted to kind of adopt my own problems. And in the process of doing that, ran into a recent planter who is a couple years ahead of me and joined his project in the Houston area. And that church basically served as a ministry entrepreneur. I was building ministries and had the exact opposite experience. We were growing at a pretty fast clip, and I was there from, I guess, about 500 in attendance to about 2,500 in attendance, and that was a four-year run. So we were adding about 500 people a year at that church, a little bit of a seeker model, you could say. So I had about 8 years of pastoral experience before transitioning into the coaching realm, which was about 8 years ago.
So as we talk today, I think that's a good thing to keep in mind, because a lot of times when a person becomes an author or a consultant and they have pastoral background, sometimes pastors, we forget about that. Talk to us about what you're learning. What are you seeing out there that churches where they're facing these growth barriers? And what are the common ones? What are maybe some indicators? And how can we begin to assess our own church? Because as you and I know, anywhere from 80 to 85% of churches out there are either plateaued or declining. It is, for many of us, a very challenging thing. So what are you seeing? How can we learn from this?
Well, I'll tell you, about 8 years ago, I just stumbled onto a question, and I've asked the question in every church environment I'm in, any church leader I talk to, I will usually ask, what is your greatest growth challenge? And when I ask that question, I realized there's a lot of different responses to this. In fact, I believe one of the first perspectives at addressing barriers is that you've got to define the problem well before trying to define the solution. If you are misdiagnosing the problem, you never break out to the next level. There's different levels of growth challenges. There are, what I call the systemic ones, the root level, and then there's the fruit level. I'm reminded of Thoreau, who said, there are 1,000 people who hack at the branches of evil for every one who hacks at the root. And we flip that around to say, there's 1,000 kind of tactics that you can use to try to, break a barrier or grow your church. And really, there's only few, one that may be the core dynamic, the root level issue. So the way I generally look at things, is at the systemic level and helping leaders kind of, focus in on the core issues. As I've done that, I've noticed that there are patterns to these systemic issues, and so much so you can begin to sense very quickly as you hear pastors talk about their challenges, which systemic issue they're falling into. For example, there's a lot, you could have a conversation and spend 30 minutes talking about, issues with parking lots or space in a sanctuary or auditorium, and miss a conversation on the redemptive heartbeat of the people, of the church, of the membership. And so, that's a much more systemic issue, because when God's people are on fire, all the other, issues come tumbling down, if you will. So it's really important to begin to think in terms of a prioritized level of what are our challenges and what really is causing us to get stuck.
Talk to us a little bit about that, and maybe a case study, whatever. I remember I was just a few weeks ago now, I was at the Leadership Summit in Willow Creek. Craig Rochelle did an incredible talk on from his book, It. And he talked about the concept when you go to an organization that's thriving, going, blowing, you sense that they have it. And he said, which was, I was intrigued because it's very common, I'm sure you see it a lot, where people looked at the outside and they said, wow, if we just had cool music like this, or if we had graphics, or if we had comfortable seating, then we would have it. And he says, that is never it. So when you hear some of these anecdotal maybe approaches, how do you address that, and how do you get to the root as opposed to the branches?
Yeah, well, it's really the process of helping a church do that is really just asking questions and drilling deep into that. I find that usually there is a small group of people, of thinkers, who do see the core issue, and it's just a matter of having enough dialogue for people to see that. I'll use, I was with two different churches yesterday in the Houston area. Both are having, I think, a shared growth challenge around one of the systemic issues that I describe as centralized leadership development. Let me paint the picture. A Lutheran church that's been around, say, 50 years, and they are in between a church of 400, a church of 800. They're probably running 500 to 550 in attendance, and they're wondering why over the last, 5 to 7 years, they seem to get stuck. There's a glass ceiling there. They can't reach that next level. And a few quick questions reveal some interesting things. I asked them to describe their leadership community, and we listed four or five groups that told about 80 to 100 people. And I asked them, how many times in the course of a year do all those people get together in one room? And the answer is no. They don't. Never. And we never have. And I would describe that as one of those massive challenges. You can't really grow a church by trying to grow the crowd on Sunday morning alone if it's going to be, I believe, a disciple-making entity. And that lack of a leadership infrastructure and a leadership pipeline, if you will, is a very clear indicator and bottleneck of that church's growth. I was with a Methodist church about 2000, and they've been stuck, same day, same city, and same dynamic. We get so fixated, Alan, on crowd ministry, right? And don't want to undermine the importance of a worship service, but in some cases, that's all we do. And if you look at the ministry of Christ, right, we see not only ministry to the crowd, but a high priority on working on his leadership core, right, the three and then the 12. And so that's one dynamic. One of the systemic issues is, are we developing leaders? And the churches that really make it happen and are able to break barriers and continue momentum, you'll find an interesting commitment to leadership development behind the scenes.
And when you say leadership development, what does it mean? What does it look like?
Yeah, I use the word centralized in particular. It's basically the idea that you have a core people who carry and own the vision, and that when I say centralized, what happens when a church goes from, say, 400 to 800, and a lot of churches have in the last decade, there's a diversity that enters in. We get more resources, we hire staff, and what you don't have to do is train your individual staff members or individual ministry volunteers in their particular ministry area. They do that by default. So your student guys are going to go to student conferences, and your children's folks are going to bring in people to talk about children's ministry. But what stops happening typically is a centralized, if you will, an IV drip from the top leadership consistently into this centralized leadership community where they're sharing stories, they're kind of nurturing the vision. That's where you're talking about and addressing the issues of redemptive passion. That's where you're helping the organization focus, which, by the way, is one of Craig's big things with it. It requires a tremendous focus, once you have it. And a lot of times that leadership development process is the only way to do it. Let me illustrate to make it easier. One of the churches I work with stops every ministry six times a year. And during that week, they get every leader in their church together for a two-hour leadership training time. Now, that's a church of groups, and they have a pretty vibrant group ministry. All groups stop happening that week so that leaders can be developed and so that vision can be cast. You know, some churches might have a once a year, two times a year vision casting moment, but this church, Clear Creek Community Church, is gonna have a pretty strong vision casting moment six times a year. And in that setting, you don't have to be apologetic. You don't have to tiptoe around like you would maybe talking to folks on a Sunday morning. These are folks who've signed in blood and they're owners of the vision, and you have frank talk. In this case, you have, you know, 300 or 400 leaders in the room that you're addressing. Another church I work with that has a centralized leadership development process is FaithBridge, United Methodist Church. And what they do, they have three shared experiences a year that basically go deep with the core values of the church. Each shared experience is built around a core value. And then the pastor does a podcast two times a month just for the leadership community, in which case he's continually sharing vision with that group of folks. So those are two examples of churches that have that pipeline. It's a centralized vision casting, ministry training venue, if you will.
So, Will, I'm a pastor sitting here listening to this, and you've just talked about some churches that are in the top, you know, 10, 5% size-wise. 80% of churches are 200 and below. They're all sorts of glass, plexiglass, bullets, you know, proof glass ceilings for these churches. I'm sitting here, I say, where do I begin? Give me some next steps that I can begin to think what you're thinking.
Yeah, if we look at the growth barriers under 400, in which case, as you said, we're talking about 90% of the churches at 200. The reason most churches don't grow beyond, say, 100 or 200 is the dynamic of what I would say is a gifted technician. And let me explain that. And by the way, Alan, it's important, I believe, to, as we talk about this, I believe God calls many of those churches to live and exist and to glorify God and to champion kingdom values at those sizes. So it's just a matter of what your DNA is, what your church unique, you know, kind of vision is. But the reason most churches are 100 to 200 is that the pastor does the ministry, right? There's one person who's working in the ministry and there's no one working on the ministry. Another way I like to think of it is you're at any given time, you're either working as a leader, as a manager, or a technician. A leader gets things done, does the right things through people. A manager does things right through people, and a technician just does it. You know, a technician is, you know, the mm-hmm. craftsman using their hands to do ministry. Most pastors, I believe, you know, are going to, their calling is going to be to work in the ministry, and they'll grow to 100 to 200. But if they're not giving ministry away, if they're not multiplying their own gifting, right, it'll just stay stuck there. Mm-hmm. But I think a pastor has to look deep inside their soul to say, what are they called to? And any church that grows past, say, 300, 400, there's got to be some level of commitment to giving ministry away and basically stepping into a leadership role that releases and rallies other people to lead.
I agree with you. That's exactly what we do, a weekly e-newsletter called Me to We, and called Leading Ideas, and it's on the whole thing of moving from me to we. And in fact, my last book was on that same theme. And so help me be encouraged. Is that something that's okay or not okay? Even in a smaller church, how can I begin to multiply my ministry?
Yeah, I think the issue of right or wrong is a tough one. I think particularly the context is important. I think it's silly to overlay some big expectations on a small town American pastor who realistically doesn't have a target group or demographic that's going to, you know, allow a church maybe to grow past 400. But I think in general, my perspective is if you're called to you know, pastoral leadership, we ought to be looking for and releasing the gifts that Paul talks about in Romans 12:8. And if we are in any way a bottleneck to God's leadership gifts being released in the body, we're holding back, kingdom dynamics. So I encourage all pastors to to look for and develop and release leaders in their context. So I think one practical question, if a pastor's struggling at that level, Alan, I talk about what I call the challenges of empowerment. I believe there is a subtle, almost addiction, if you will, to being in the ministry. And I say this because it was my own journey. Hmm. The first day I worked in a church that had a value of empowerment, I can remember it was a Tuesday. I was relatively fresh out of seminary. I came in, and I remember thinking that there's a bunch of small groups that we have in our church that I'm going to now lead. Okay, and I thought, okay, I remember talking to my first group leader, and it was a Thursday night meeting. It was a Tuesday morning, and he said, as a new pastor, he said, if you want to come visit our group on Thursday, that would be great. And that kind of turned my world upside down, because I thought I was going to come in and lead that group for him. And so immediately I had to take this, sophomoric seminarian perspective that I was going to go in and lead the group. And I realized that I had to lead that group by taking that group leader to lunch. And I wasn't trained how to do that in seminary.
Hmm.
So when I talk about this empowerment challenge, I talk about several dynamics. To put other leaders in the game, you have to increase the scope of unknown ministry outcomes. You have to embrace uncertainty, a little bit more. You have to sacrifice short-term ministry efficiency, because it would be easier to get it done yourself, but involving others requires more patience. So you have to slow down to speed up.
That's true.
Those kinds of dynamics, and there's several others, but there has to be this dying to being in the ministry so that the ministry can go to the next level.
That's great. That's wonderful. We are out of time. Tell us, how can we learn more about what you're doing? What's your website?
I actually, before writing Church Unique, did a project with Aubrey Malfers called Building Leaders, and that book came out in 2004. And that is actually a book written on the one systemic issue of building a leadership development process for your church. So
that is a good book. I've read that.
Out there.
And your website is?
The website is auxano.com.
Spell that.
auxano.com, or you can go to churchunique.com.
That's great. Hey, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
You bet, Alan. Appreciate being on.
If you'd like to learn more about Rev Magazine, go to rev.org and discover the world's most practical church leader periodical. I'm Alan Nelson, wishing you God's best in your ministry.